Okay, I think we're on. Hello and welcome to the Voices for Change radio show. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, founder of the Incandescent Group, and thrilled to be here with two truly amazing women that I'm so honored to know. Tracy Schott is the host of the Voices for Change radio show and the creator of Voices for Change and the filmmaker who made Finding Jen's Voice, which is just a powerful, powerful documentary about intimate partner violence. It's just terrible. And One Jen is Pujamanga's company, and we are thrilled that we're all working together. She is in Delhi, so they are 9.5, depending on your time zone, 9.5, 10.5 hours. So it's late for her, early for us. So I'm going to kick it over to Tracy to host the show and have this wonderful conversation. Take it away.
Thank you, Hope. And welcome everybody again to Voices for Change Radio. So I think this is our third show that I'm hosting, and I'm actually having a lot of fun with it, mostly because I get to talk to some of my amazing friends who are working in the space of fighting gender violence. Pujamanga is somebody that I met about a year and a half ago, right? And we met when Pooja came to Philadelphia. At that point, I had already commissioned One Jen to help create the Voices for Change website and digital platform for streaming Finding Jen's Voice. Since that time, with Pooja's help and inspiration, it's become so much more than just a place to watch the film. I've just been so struck by Pooja's creativity and commitment to changing the world for good. So I want to thank you, Pooja, for being here. Do you want to tell us a little bit about One Jen?
Sure, yeah. Thank you so much for having me here. And it's incredible to talk to such powerful women on this platform. So talking about One Jen, I met Tracy a year and a half ago. So One Jen, so we're going to have a third anniversary on 14th of February, this Valentine's Day. So we're going to be 3 years old. So One Jen started with a very different, management consulting background altogether. So my other co-founder, Paul, and I, both of us come from management consulting backgrounds, and we used to work with all these corporates. And, you know, it's like a similar thing that everybody does, making rich people richer and stuff like that. So it was nothing purposeful as such. So years back, we started working with this incredible organization based in USA, and they were into education space, and they really wanted to change the world and the way it operates and how do you really bring in the positivity in this coming generation and how you can change the world. And that idea seemed really wonderful to us. And then we realized and we sat down and then we started talking with working with United Nations and so many other organizations, working with impact sector. And then we sat down and we thought that, how about we do this full time? So rather than giving our services to big corporates, which already have enough resources, and impact space is a very underserved sector as such. So we decided to invest all our skill set, all our resources, in the impact space, in the SDG space. And we just thought that in one generation, if we can make the world a better place, I mean, you actually make the planet sustainable. So hence One Jen, and that's how One Jen was born. And right after, we started our operations, we met Tracy, and I've personally been very inclined in the gender space. And I mean, it's been an incredible journey so far. So Tracy has been one of our initial members when we started One Jen. So we have been together in this journey, so to say.
Well, I met Paul before I met you, and we were at a pitch session. Paul was there with a colleague, and Kelly, who we are going to interview next week, introduced me to Paul and Jim and she started telling them about my film. And Jim said, wait a minute, I've seen your film. I love your film. He looked at Paul and he said, this is the documentary I was telling you about this morning. And Paul reached over and gave me a big hug. And That was the first time I met Paul, was with a hug. He was like, we are meant to work together. And so it's been really fun to, you know, grow this concept and idea for using technology and using the film and media to really, you know, increase people's awareness and change the world, just like you said. You know, Pooja thinks big, which I love. Sometimes it scares me. But, you know, she's the one who says things like, yeah, we need to raise $1 million this year. And I'm like, what? But she thinks big, like we're going to change the world in one generation, and encourages me to think big, like we're going to eliminate tolerance for gender violence in one generation. And so that's really important, and it's great to have partners like Pooja and Hope. So I'm very grateful to be working with both of you. Tell me a little bit about your own personal connection to wanting to change the world in terms of gender violence and gender equality.
So I have always been inclined towards the space, gender equality. When I was little, this word did not even exist as such, you know. It all started with women empowerment, and then people realized, no, you do not have to bring in this word women empowerment. It should be gender equality, and that is the right way to address it. So it all started when I was very little, and growing up, I was always told, oh, no, you're a girl, you're not supposed to do this. No, girls don't do that, boys do that. So I was always fascinated. I remember when I was in school, so we had these co-curricular, extracurricular classes, and I wanted to opt for aeromodeling. I wanted to opt for electrical engineering, and I was given cooking because they said, hey, I think you'll be interested in that. And okay, so that was, and that is when it triggered me, oh my God, I am being treated differently because of my gender. And I was, I think, 11 or 12 at that time. And that is how I gradually became an advocate who started talking about it openly, discussing with my parents and talking with my family members and my friends that why are we treated differently? Then growing up, when you're a teenager, you're in relationships, you know, you have a very different kind of expectations. And as a girl, you are expected to do different things. As a boy, you're expected to do different things. So those kind of things I never wired correctly in my head. I couldn't understand that. What does that really mean? It was very hard for me to absorb that difference specifically based on gender. So gradually, you know, I experienced a lot of things, and my education, I studied in a college which was based in a very peripheral area of Delhi, and women were not treated nicely. In fact, we were looked down upon that, oh my God, you're a woman, you want to be an engineer? Why do you want to be an engineer? You should just get married, have kids, you know, you need to take care of the kitchen. So, I mean, it's very surprising to say that people still say those words. And we're often reminded of our boundaries, so to say, that as a woman, you know, you should be doing this, doing that, don't go out late at night. And it was irritating, it was annoying. So I thought, other than rolling my eyes, there's another thing that I can do. I can, you know, fight about it. So then I started working with these amazing, incredible women. I went online, I tried to search that, you know, if there's anybody working in this space. So from very early on, when I was in high school, I started partnering with a lot of nonprofits and started working with them to understand the space better, because I have been through this and I don't want anybody to tell people what you're supposed to do or not supposed to do just because you belong to a particular gender. Then one day I saw your documentary, and I had no idea that I was in an abusive relationship until I saw the documentary when I was in school back then. So I was just looking at the documentary and I was like, oh my God, when I was in school, it happened to me. Nobody physically touched me or harmed me, but emotionally, financially, I mean, you know, these things also count. And that is when the light bulb went on. And I was like, oh my God, I mean, this, every girl needs to see this. Every individual needs to see this. Even the boys from early on need to see this, that I'm not supposed to act this way when I'm in a relationship or I'm dating somebody. So it's been a long journey in the space so far. So when I saw your documentary, I was like hooked. I was like, okay, we have to make it viral. We have to make it reach to every single household, to every single family.
Well, I so appreciate that passion. And, you know, it's so wonderful to have partners in this journey. You know, a lot of this journey I've done on my own, and that's a lonely space, and it's hard to keep your keep your chin up, because the numbers for gender violence aren't going down. If anything, with the pandemic, they've been going up. What are you guys seeing in India in terms of statistics around intimate partner violence?
I would say that India, like no other country, has seen this massive uprise in the numbers, in the statistics. At least the reports have gone up. The last time I was reading about the shadow pandemic, and last year, 2020, I mean, the numbers went as high as more than 50%. So it's a lot. It's a lot to absorb. And it was very, I was curious that, you know, suddenly, I mean, you know, you're still living in the same house. What really made it happen? And then I was reading about mental health as well and so many other factors. The confrontation has increased. Earlier, people had some sort of, you know, outlet. People used to have jobs, they used to go out, they used to have a vacation. So, but the amount of confrontation that increased. And I would not say that it has, statistically, I understand that, you know, the numbers, the physical violence has come up a lot, but it also represents that there always have been cracks in the system. The pandemic has just made us open our eyes to see them, but the cracks have always been there. The number of reports have, of domestic abuse have gone high. I have seen my own house help, my own help facing this family-based violence, and it's not cool. And I literally had to go with her and, you know, report the crime. And a lot of women are scared that, you know, if we, because a lot of people from India, specifically in India, a lot of women are homemakers. They stay inside the house. They're not encouraged to go out and work. So they also do not have any other place to go because their parents will not accept them back. So they have to, they don't have a choice other than accepting that this is how their life is going to be. So what we saw in India, it's disturbing. I was very, very shocked to see the numbers because I really thought that with the rise of technology, with the openness and social media and awareness, I mean, we are, you know, making a lot of progress, but the numbers doubled up during the pandemic. And it really tells you a lot about the fundamental ideology with which we operate in, that people still consider, you know, women as somebody that you can vent out your anger on, or, you know, you still have very strong gender-based assumptions and roles and stereotypes, and they're embedded in your system, and it'll take a lot of time, at least a generation, to get past that.
Well, you know, it's really easy for people in the U.S. to look at India and go, you know, it's their culture, it's, you know, it's much, things are much worse there, but they're marginally better here, you know, very marginally in terms of our statistics, you know, and the whole gender inequality continues. You know, we continue in this country to see that women are, you know, still paid like 78 cents on the dollar to men for equal work. You know, opportunities for girls, while they exist in theory, they seem to be a little bit harder for many girls to accomplish. So it's a universal problem. You know, statistically, we've seen 50,000 women each year being murdered worldwide by intimate partners or family members. That's a lot of people. And so the homicide rates, I'm sure, are going up in this country. It usually takes a couple of years for the CDC to be able to examine the data. And because there aren't really good reporting mechanisms for how people are murdered, it's inconsistent across the 50 states. So it's going to take a couple of years till we really know what this pandemic is doing in terms of intimate partner homicide. Are you hearing anything on the ground in India in terms of increased rates of homicide as well as physical violence?
Indeed, indeed. In fact, it's very surprising, but in India, domestic abuse was considered as a family matter, and nobody used to intervene. It was not even considered a crime. In fact, marital rape as well has finally gotten some attention. Before that, it was supposed to be called as, this is something which is between a husband and a wife, and they'll figure it out. So a lot of things are not even considered a crime. Because people feel that, you know, because we have a very different kind of culture. So, and there's no sense of individualism as well. You know, everything is always a family thing. People always do things together. So it's not even considered violation anymore. So every time a woman is violated, it's not even considered a violation because they feel that, oh, I mean, you know, these things happen. Yeah, whatever. It happens. It's always brushed away as if it's just another Monday. So in India, homicide definitely is increasing, but the abusive relationships, the rate of intimate partner violence is on the rise, one, because of the pandemic, and second, because of the rise in frustration as well. So we never talk about how mental health and how these things are correlated. Although, I mean, you know, your partner should not be responsible for your mental health, that they should not be on the receiving end of that abuse. However, these things are very, very largely correlated. And specifically in this country, it is considered okay to, you know, dump all your frustration on your wife or on your girlfriend or on your, you know, your partner. It is considered okay. So in India, from statistics perspective, it's not going down at all. In fact, I would say with the rise in tension and the stress, it's rather increasing. While, you know, there are a lot of organizations who are coming up with a lot of awareness campaigns, but it doesn't seem to, you know, slow down the growth in the numbers.
Yeah. So what, how do we change that? And what do you think, what are some of your ideas for how Voices for Change can make an impact in India and other countries, you know, in Asia or Africa? What, do you have some thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think out of a lot of initiatives that we can definitely work upon, I mean, you know, Voices for Change has some amazing training programs on the documentary for awareness, which I think is definitely a must on, you know, on these healthcare levels and on the law enforcement level. But on a personal level as well, you know, one of the things that we started working upon, this campaign called Active Voices, I think that has a lot of potential because I think it's very important for people to internalize this as well, because it's not a change which will come out of the fear of law or just the fear of police. This is something which has to be internalized. It's a very, very fundamental thing. So till the time you consider, you know, victim shaming okay, till the time you consider that, you know, it's not a perpetrator's fault, of course, these numbers will keep on increasing. And we have often talked about it as well, that every time people say, oh, you know, so many women are getting raped, this country is not safe. That's one way of saying it, but it's very passive. Rather than saying that, if you focus on people who are raping, if you say that, oh my God, so many men are raping women, what do we do about them? So you are bringing men to the center, rather than saying that, you know what, women are not safe late at night. Just say, men are making things so unsafe for women late at night. Why don't we lock our men inside so that, you know, it's, we have safer streets, we have safer environment. So focus on the right things. So one of the things that I'm trying to do with Tracy is that, you know, let's try to divert and focus our attention on what really needs attention. Somebody who has survived abuse is already being violated. You don't have to violate them twice by, you know, again, talking about that, oh, what were you wearing? What were you doing? I mean, don't violate them once again. And it's not even their fault. That's such a wrong thing to focus on. So rather than doing that, let's just focus on who really is the active agent, who is causing violence, who's causing abuse, who's causing this violation, and then let's figure it out. And the dialogues and the you know, the solution is going to be very different because they'll be oriented on men then. It won't be a women issue because it's not a women's issue. It's a men's issue. Let's call spade a spade. So that is, I think, one of the ideas that fundamentally, I mean, the dialogue has to change, the narrative has to change. And then we can talk about, you know, making some big impact.
I love this idea of taking the onus of change off of women. You know, so much of the fight against intimate partner violence is part and parcel of the women's movement. When do we get men involved? How do we engage men in this fight? How do we create outrage among men, as opposed to it being a problem that women have to fix on their own? And you're right, language is so embedded in the culture. I also, you know, I wonder about, you know, obviously we're working on a digital platform. How, what's the access in India across the population to digital learning and digital communication? Right. I mean, I think of India as very advanced technologically, obviously, but also great variability in terms of education and economics. And what are some of your observations there?
I feel that India is a country with such immense opportunities when you talk about digital penetration, because while, yes, we have a lot of people who still do not have access as they should, we still have a whole lot of people who have access to internet, who have access to smartphones. Specifically, if you talk about these basic apps like Instagram, like Facebook, we also had this app called TikTok. It's across the country, you know? I mean, even if you go to the remotest part of the countries, people know how to use smartphones. People know how to use all these devices. We have data plans. We have Wi-Fis. And yes, I mean, you know, there's still a lot of native and tribal communities who do not have access to it. But still, there's a whole lot of population, which is more than, you know, any other country, I would say, because of, you know, the population that we have. Who has access to, you know, digital technology and access to smartphones, access to internet. So I feel that, and as I say, you know, it's not just a problem which is only in rural areas, peripheral areas, even in the urban settings, in metro cities. I mean, it's immense, it's a lot. So this is the kind of documentary, these are the kind of training, these are the kind of learnings that every individual, every household, every family should be involved in, should be taking. So from that perspective, I think the opportunity is immense in India. Yes, I mean, we do have a lot of languages. So I think regionality and, you know, making it available in regional languages, having lighter versions of the application, those are the things that, you know, technology can certainly solve, which is why we're here. But from opportunity perspective, yes, you're right. We have a whole population in front of us who is, you know, waiting for tools like this. Who should be given tools like this?
Well, and you know, if the majority of the population is still not aware or fighting these gender violence, then you do kind of need to try to get the low-hanging fruit first. You know, people who are educated, people who have the technology, you still have to change their mindset. And there are also people in power who are more likely to enforce laws if they're in place with people who maybe don't have the same assets. I do love One Gen's mission to change the world in one generation. And it's one of the reasons that I was so excited to work with you with Voices for Change. This collaboration, you've come up with some other ideas, and one of them, which we're launching this week, is the virtual webinar tour. Why don't you talk a little bit about that? Because this really came from you, and honestly, my first response was, I don't have time to do that. That's crazy. But it's morphing into something that's really exciting. Why don't you talk a little bit about the power of these kind of educational tools?
Yeah, I mean, I would rather say that, you know, we kind of co-created this because, you know, it was more like a back and forth. There was a lot of give and take that happened in that discussion. So I would not be taking all the credit for that. But yeah, I mean, I really feel that when you really want to have an impact campaign, you need to look at all the, you know, levels of the pyramid. While you have a whole lot of opportunities lying at the bottom of the pyramid, which is like directly a beneficiaries, but at the same time, you need to work with the government organizations, you need to work with other nonprofits, you need to work with foundations, you need to work with people in power, with policymakers. So all of those people are equally responsible. So all these structures have to be moved in sync at the right time if you really want to create a large-scale sustainable impact in that sense. So that was the idea behind this virtual tour, that Voices for Change, what we envision is that imagine, you know, the entire world, you know, you can reach out to anybody in the world, but if you start small, if you start with the USA, imagine having a partner in every single state who can help you spread your, you know, penetration across the ground. You can penetrate on the ground as well, and you get to talk with local partners. You can talk with local foundations. You can talk with local people. And every city, every state has its own issues. Culturally, they're very different, you know. From laws perspective, they're very different. From access to technology perspective, they're very different. So the idea was that, you know, collaborating with the local organizations in every single state and having a webinar in every state and talking about the issues that that particular state is facing specifically in the space of intimate partner violence. And once you have, you know, the strength of local partners, once you have allies, make them your allies, it's very easy to then grow bigger because you know the ground reality. You're not just, you know, shooting ideas in the air then. It's more real, you know, real stories. So the idea was, you know, to make Tracy be a rock star who's going to go state to state and she's going to have these amazing webinars. And yeah, I mean, that's how we really collaborate with people. And like you said, that, you know, systemic start change starts locally. And I truly believe in that. So that was the idea, that let's spread our wings across USA.
Yeah, so we are working. We've got our first webinar is local here in Pennsylvania, where I am. Always start with the low hanging fruit. So for me, I have relationships that are close and easy, and without having to worry about distance, we decided to start local. We're talking teen dating violence, and then next month we're going to be in Austin, Texas, and working with Kelsey McKay from Respond Against Violence, talking about beyond defunding the police and engaging community organizations in the fight against domestic violence. We're going to be talking, it looks like we might be going to New Orleans in April and talking about the shadow pandemic and how the pandemic is leading to an increase in rates of reporting and homicides. We've got a group in San Francisco in May, and we're going to be talking about homelessness and domestic violence, which are hugely intersected. And we've got David Adams from Emerge in Cambridge in the Boston area, who developed the first batterers intervention program in the country. He's going to be talking about how there is hope for treating perpetrators of intimate partner violence and what it takes. So that's our schedule so far, and we're in conversation with other people. So I'm grateful to you for coming up, you know, with this idea and maybe just kind of pushing me along. You know, we won't get to all 50 states the first year, but maybe by the end of 2022, we'll see the whole country. And so I do thank you for that. So what else is OneGen working on these days?
Oh my God, so there's a lot going on. We always had a lot of passion for education and climate action. So we had these three massive pillars that, you know, OneGen was built on. One was gender equality, and not just equality. We also want to move ahead and we want to talk about gender equity as well, that, you know, let's create an equitable environment for everybody. Because sooner or later you'll realize that equality is a hoax. So you really have to move towards equity then. So that is one. Second thing, of course, you know, the education, because everything stems out of that eventually. And third is the climate action. So we do have a very high focus on these three areas right now. Other than that, we are working on safe sanitation and hygiene for women, because in India, that is one of the leading causes why girls are leaving schools, lack of basic sanitation. So sanitation hygiene is another thing we're working on. We're also working on some very interesting tools where we're trying to provide support to the elderly, to the senior citizens, to empower them and to give them, you know, their social life back, specifically, which has been lost because of the pandemic. That is another thing we're working on. And other than that, in climate space, working across the globe with the young ambassadors and, you know, bringing their stories together, working for specifically for the coral impact in the coral areas. That is another thing. My God, there's so much. Then we're also working with a lot of mountain communities here in India, in the northern parts of India, and we're trying to encourage the nano entrepreneurs and the micro entrepreneurs so that, you know, they can grow strong locally, and let's try to give them more business so they can, you know, there's no migration as such. So these are some of the things that we are actively engaged in.
Well, one of the coolest things has come out of the pandemic, you know, there has been an upside, and the upside is that we're realizing how to use the technological tools that have existed for a while, and getting comfortable with having conversations with people who are in a time zone 10 and a half hours away, and finding all the commonalities in terms of goals and needs, and strategizing ways to make those changes. I think it's really exciting, and I think it's you know, I was disappointed because last year we had originally talked at the beginning of the year that I was gonna come to India and we were going to show Finding Jen's Voice at theaters in India. And of course that didn't happen, and it won't happen this year either, but maybe 2022 I can come to you, and that would be really, really fun. I think it's just so important that we continue to broaden our conversations and open the space to voices that maybe we wouldn't hear otherwise. I mean, if anything this pandemic has taught us is that we are one world, and what affects one of us affects all of us, and we can no longer live in an us and them space, because it affects us all. So I do thank you so much for all that you're doing. Is there anything else that you would like to share with our audience before we check off?
Yeah, I mean, other than, you know, thanking you for having me here, and, you know, it's been such a wonderful journey. One of the things that, if any young people are watching this, one of the things that I've always encouraged everybody is that, you know, always be enterprising, always figure out that how you can use your skill set and your education, how can you put all of that to good use. And any kind of skill set that you have, be it in the field of, you know, engineering, if you are a good coder, even if you're a good designer, if you're a filmmaker, you could be an artist, a painter, you could be anything. I mean, just remember that all the skills that you possess, all the knowledge that you possess, you can always use that to bring out positive changes in the world. And so I just want to encourage all the young audience here that, you know, I understand there's a lot of competition and, you know, your studies and everything, it's just not easy. You all are a generation of equals. The kind of access to technology and social media and a lot of information that you have, I didn't have it back then. And I really had to struggle through to get access to that information. So you know how to put that knowledge to good use. So I just want to say that, you know, you are the generation we're really counting on. The world is your oyster, and I just want everybody to just you know, this is the only thing I always tell all the young people, that put your skill set to good use. There's a lot of opportunities out there. I mean, always remember the triple bottom line. Think of the planet, then think of people, then think of profit. and you'll be really, really successful.
Ah, what great, great advice. I love it. Think of the planet, think of the people, then think of the profit. It's hard to top that, huh? I hope.
I think that's a perfect way to end the show. That's so beautiful, Pooja. We're really honored. I'm really honored to know you and to know that you're in the world making such a big change in such a beautiful way. And, you know, great knowing Tracy, because together, I think we can all work to put an end to domestic abuse. It's just such a horrifying thing. And this focus on men, that it's not a women's issue. It's, you know, and it, not all, you know, not all men are, the, sometimes they're the victim too, right? So you're just trying to make sure that people are kind of conscious of things. So the triple bottom line, let's go for that. And we're gonna come back next week for another episode of Voices for Change radio show, starring Tracy Schott and her amazing documentary, Finding Jen's Voice. So we will talk to you soon. Everyone stay safe, and we'll be back in touch.